Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. Our guest this episode, we have Kellen Latindress. He's a North Dakota guy. It's his first time on, so it's fun to get to know him. But Kellen's a fishing guide here in North Dakota, and he's a multi-species guy. And I think that, I really enjoy talking to individuals like this that are, have that guide career where you're just unquestionably putting endless hours on the water and, have great big picture perspective. Because as a fishing guide, anybody that does it, anybody that listens to this show, when we talk to fishing guides, you have great big picture perspective, I guess I feel like, because you're constantly fishing with strangers, constantly helping people of all shapes and sizes and different skill levels catch fish in different scenarios. And I think to do that well and do that for at least a while as a career definitely means you got a few things figured out. And so I love pushing those buttons with Kellen. But also, he's a multi-species guy. And, here in North Dakota, we can definitely get pretty walleye-centric on a lot of these conversations and just in general, the fishing community. And Kellen has some great, great stories and perspective on catching big walleyes in this conversation. But he's also a musky guy, he's a bass guy, he's a trout guy. Like, really, anything that bends the rod, Kellen's such a fishy guy. And, I just take a lot away from people like that that can just be fishy in any situation, any time of year, for any species. Just be somebody that can be a chameleon, so to speak. Just be so versatile that, be able to sort of break down any scenario, any situation, any condition for just about any species. And it's really not even about the species. It's more about just reading the nature of the situation and, reading the water, understanding the time of year, understanding forage, understanding almost everything else that is just as important as understanding the species that you're after. And you can usually figure out how to trigger bites. And it's amazing how much, I think about multi-species individuals like Kellen. He fishes, one day he can be fishing musky, the next day he's fishing big walleyes, the next day he's fishing bass, and, in not such an order. And it's amazing how much you take from, significantly from one species and you bring it into another species the next day when you're fishing somewhere else doing something completely different. But there are certain details in the fine print of fishing that, really outstanding anglers can really pick up on and really apply to different species. And that's definitely one of the buttons that I like to push with Kellen in this interview, is just how much influence he has from one species to the other when it comes to finding and catching and triggering these bites. And just a great, great fishing conversation here with another new fantastic angler, and that is Kellen Latindress. Let's get to it. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. If you have any fishing memory or a fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work here at the JMO headquarters. We are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at rizavitaxidermystudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. Kellen Latindress. All right, let's get started right here, man. Kellen, it's your first time on. I got to hear about you a little bit. I definitely get some recommendations. I love, sort of silently stalking you on social media at times, especially with some of your musky stuff. It's really, really cool what you got going on. I definitely want to get into some of that, but I need to hear a little bit about you more personally and kind of get to know you a little bit and establish that. So where are you from, man? Where does this whole like fishing career actually start for you? Go ahead.
Born and raised in Minot, North Dakota, and I really haven't ventured anywhere other than Minot. I've fished all over the United States, but I've just lived here and grew up fishing off the dock at Partial Bay and camping at Centennial, and a lot of shore fishing as a kid, so probably where my passion started.
But where did some of those incremental steps start, moving you forward, and when did you start thinking maybe that's what you wanted to do for a living?
I've always had a passion for fishing. My dad, growing up, my dad did fish a little bit. We We never had a boat till I was probably like sixth grade, seventh grade. So I was always the kid on the dock that was staring at the boats going in and out. I had an uncle that took me a few times. And later in life, we got a boat and just started, I don't know, fishing with buddies, fishing the Mouse River. And then, I don't know, worked at Shields. That maybe inspired the passion a little bit. And then as we got older, I started fishing a little bit of tournaments, had some luck with some tournaments. And my wife, 4 years ago, as far as how I got into guiding, 4 years ago, my wife wanted to stay at home for a summer. We had a little boy, Ollie, my middle child, and she wanted to stay at home. So I said, you know what, I'm going to try guiding on the side. I'd had people in the past ask me to, you know, take them out fishing. And what started as a idea or like a part-time gig to make a little extra money kind of blew up and went full-time in the summer, I would say, for sure full-time in the summer. So I started with a passion of walleyes, and I'm not saying my walleye passion has died, but as you see from my social media, I chase everything. I love anything that makes the rod bend and anything that I can cast at. I'm addicted to casting. So I kind of got on a smallmouth bass kick, and then probably about 2012, I had a good friend who moved, or he fished Devil's Lake growing up his whole life. And if you know how Sakakawea was back in the 90s and stuff, a lot of people were just bottom bouncer spinners. So my buddy came over Sakakawea fishing with me, and we started chucking cranks. And I don't know, ever since I started fishing with him, kind of changed the way I fished. And now I'm just chucking bigger baits at muskies, or I'm chucking stuff at trout. Lately this summer, trout has been my passion, trout and muskie, I'd say. So
I mean, it sounds like you like to fish shallow, right? If you're a caster, like if you're casting, not to say that, you know, with forward sonar these days, I mean, we're not casting at fish that are living deep too, especially talking like smallmouth and walleyes, but I guess I like, you know, getting into people's sort of psyche as it relates to, you know, your fishing style. And you're probably the kind of guy that can break down shallow water really well.
Yeah, so I do. I would say, like, especially guiding, if I can teach people in my boat how to cast, how to pitch a jig, how to pitch a chatterbait. I mean, I fish breaking down water. First off, I fish a lot of bass style baits. I had a guy named Steve Basinger. You asked how I started fishing. I had a guy that I met in probably 2010, another guy that really helped me with fishing, and it was bass fishing. Like, he was throwing chatterbaits and spinnerbaits for walleyes, and now that's a common thing. But back then, no, it wasn't. Like, big single hook instead of a crankbait, he's ripping a big single hook through weeds, and or a big paddle tail through weeds. And you're seeing that now, but 10, 15 years ago, that was something that wasn't really going on. And yesterday I was chucking a chatterbait almost the whole day. Most people look at that and think it's a bass bait. You know, I think in the Dakotas, especially in Western North Dakota, you know, Devil's Lake was known as a casting lake, that pelican bite, and the north end of Devil's in the spring, you had a lot of guys that casted it. Sakakawea, you didn't really see that happen right away. It slowly kind of evolved, and now I guess the internet, everyone is learning. The learning curve has definitely been shortened on that. But as far as breaking down water, when I'm walleye fishing now, if I'm gonna, I'll go walleyes first for species. I'm always looking for weeds for walleyes. Weeds, I'm looking for white bass. A guy named Clayton Folden. Everyone's heard Clayton.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Legend. He is the legend. I'm very lucky to have some good fishermen in my life, and Clayton is a guy that on a lot of nights we'll get done guiding, he'll call me up, hey kid, you want to go fishing? And that's like one of the biggest blessings I have as an outdoorsman. We'll jump in the boat and share the boat together for the night. But he's the one that taught me, you know, if you find white bass, there's walleyes close by. So I don't know, just kind of looking for certain species, looking for dirty water. If I'm fishing Sakakawea, I don't want clean water at all. If I can see the bottom in 3 foot of water, probably not going to fish it very often. Look for a lot of that. Wind plays a big factor into it. So I don't know if I'm looking, the only time I'm looking for rock a lot of times is when I'm chasing smallies, obviously. I've always kind of been a weed guy when it comes to walleyes.
So you're definitely a very instinctual fisherman. You know, like you say, this day and age, the learning curve, the internet, it's really technology driven, a lot of these conversations. But, these guys that can still just go out and just read water and put in the work. I just like that. I like kind of pressing that button with guys like you, because not everybody's really like that. Not everybody, for guys, the year round, they can just cover that shallow water. That is some of the most fun, and is still yet, even I think across the country, maybe you could speak on this, but that's still kind of the most unknown thing, because those are some of the places where you can't leverage electronics exclusively. And so just, like reading the room a little bit, catching other species to kind of help you dial in where a big walleye might live, though. Any stories or any specific memories or experiences that have helped you build confidence in that, dude, would be awesome. Anything come to mind?
Yeah, so I think anytime as a fisherman, that's like, I mentioned Clayton already, mentioned a guy that helped me with bass fishing. Anytime you can fish multi-species and learn, like muskie fishing has taught me how to be a better walleye fisherman. Walleye fishing has probably taught me how to be a better musky fisherman and so on. Same with bass. And I would say just last 2 weeks ago, I've never met Tom Wynn in person, but he was fishing right next to me. I was guiding and I watched him do something in Skakuia that I've never seen before. He was chasing open water fish with his forward facing sonar. And the Dakotas is definitely, I might ruffle feathers with some of my fellow fishermen. I would say that we're behind the learning curve on some of this stuff as far as electronics and picking up on new things. We're a lot of North Dakota's stuck on a bottom bouncer and a spinner. And when it comes to guiding, I would say that I love taking people out, new experiences. Last Thursday, I had a kid that caught his first walleye with me. We were trolling for him. He was 5 years old. But a lot of times, if I treat it as a successful day, if I can get you to learn how to feel the bite, set the hook, cast good, fundamentals, teaching you how to fish kind of. To me, it's not always based on a limit. I mean, I do have lots of successful days as far as that's concerned, but I love teaching you something and I love learning too. So as far as people I've learned from or stories, The chatterbait thing was something I learned from Steve. I was pre-fishing for the Gov Cup in 2010, and I was on a bite where we were throwing little countdowns, and I kept telling him, like, hey, I'm picking up all these weeds. And he's like, well, why wouldn't you just throw this? And to him, it was nonsense. Well, you have a chatterbait that the big hook faces up. It's going through the weeds. And after that, it was nonsense. Like, it was, why would I even try crank up shallow? And that's an experience. Or Clayton Folden, here's a good Clayton story that taught me a lot about the tail race. Clayton, I was probably a freshman in high school, sophomore in high school. I went fishing with him, and it was probably the most humbling, frustrating day I've ever had tailor fishing. I caught one fish, and when I say caught, I didn't even catch one. It got to the boat. We didn't get it in the net, but when you don't put one in the boat and it gets to the boat and it falls off, you just count it as one. Because Clayton caught 18. He had 18 walleyes that he netted that day. I had one, and I tried every bait. I mean, I'm sure you've had those days where you're looking at the jig cadence of the guy next to you. Every time he flipped his wrist a little bit, I flipped my wrist. Every time he took a sip of water, I took a sip of water. And guess what? I never caught nothing. At the end of the day, we're putting everything away, and he's like, what kind of line you got on that rod, kid? And I'm like, I got, like 10-pound fire line or something. And he's like, huh. I'm like, I'd switch my rods around, switch lures around. He was using 4-pound sensation that day, 4-pound mono. And the lighter line diameter cuts the current. And in the tail race, that can be a big thing. And line diameter is everything in the tail race or in the Missouri River in the spring when they're not very active. And that was a story that kind of, taught me a lot about line diameter and catching fish. And he waited all day long. In the back of his head, he was smiling, watching me struggle, which I was not smiling. But I love that story now because it taught me a lifelong lesson in outdoors as far as fishing. I see that a lot with fishing the tail race, for instance. That's one story that comes right to mind off the top of my head. Perch fishing with John Hoyer 2-3 years ago. I watched John ripping little jig wraps away from perch and getting them to like kind of frenzy up. Like he would reel them up 5 foot off the bottom real fast and try to get them to chase. And we had inactive perch and John could get these fish to trigger. And I would think, you've had him on the show. I would think a lot of that is from muskie fishing. You know, we learn in muskie fishing, the biggest mistake when I'm guiding that I see people make a lot of times is, oh, here comes a big one. And what do? They stop reeling. And that fish just goes dormant, just slowly sinks the air out of her belly. She goes down to the bottom. You don't see her again. Well, you take that bait away from her and play the cat and mouse game. You rip it away. And what does it do? It fires up. She tail kicks big and she eats in the corner. Well, that works on other species too. It definitely works on perch. And it's kind of neat. I've seen it recently on trout, actually, on, you know, aggressively ripping baits away from trout and watching them go nuts for it. So I've seen, I guess, picking up little pieces from all these little fishermen. If you can learn from some of the best fishermen and take little bits and pieces from each one, it's just going to, I think part of being a good fisherman is being humble enough to learn from others. And I've been lucky enough to have the right people in my life to kind of teach me a lot of things. So, and I've had the willpower, I should say, or the lack of brain cells where I'll spend all day on the lake. I get a day off. I'll guide 4 or 5 days straight. And if my wife and kids are somewhere doing something and I have a free day, I'm out casting. Like I'm out exploring new ground. I love fishing new water. I love fishing water. Yesterday was the first time I'd ever fished like the Indian Hills area. And I'd never been out there before. And it's amazing, North Dakota, how blessed we are to have the water we have. Like it was some of the most beautiful area I've ever fished. And here I am 41 years old and I've never even been on that part of the lake yet.
Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. If you have any fishing memory or a fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work. Here at the JMO headquarters, we are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at RizaviTaxidermyStudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. Like, are you the type of guy that has a lot of different stuff ready to go for different situations? Or do you feel like your experience has brought you to a few sort of philosophies, you know, just any of those stories where you just had some really good learning, you know, in a particular situation?
As far as situational, like I have all kinds of fishing philosophies. I love talking philosophy in the boat with my clients. And I hope that 10% of my philosophies are right when I die. I got a lot of wrong ones, but you know, as far as stories, Clayton taught me this one too. When I leave the boat dock, I go off of memories a lot of times. And you know, if you see paddlefish rolling, the walleyes are biting in the north end of Van Hook. They've officially migrated up there. I don't know if they come at the same time or what, but that is 100% experience. And it wasn't my experience. That's me maybe stealing it, or if you want to say stealing it, or being a pirate of good information. You'd be a fool not to take good information from someone that's trying to help you out. But, you know, I always, when I leave the boat dock, I would say 90% of the time I know where I'm going or what I'm going to do. You know, I'm very situational. So I, the only thing that stays steady with me is I avoid boats. I don't fish around boats very often. And I get that a lot with my clients. So I'll get the, hey, look over there. There must be a bunch of fish biting. But we, I guess you, everyone has their milk runs and maybe their memories, but I go a lot off of wind direction, water temps, knowing the fish patterns. 90% of my walleye fish guiding or guiding on walleye fishing is on either Newtown or Van Hook or the tail race. And a lot of that is knowing the migration, you know, knowing that when the water is rising, you have a lot of good weeds that you are going to be, there's going to be a shallow water bite. You know, our water is just starting to drop in Skakaway right now. I hope those fish hold shallow. We got a couple big tournaments coming up. It'd be fun to see, it'd be fun for me to see a bite that is shallow that, you know, maybe that isn't one just on open water forward facing sonar. That gives it a couple different bites, you know. So you get more of a variety of fish. I always cheer from the sidelines. You know, we're all tied into a lot of these fishermen now with social media, with friends. So I don't get time to fish tournaments anymore, but I'm always paying attention to them and looking at them, and it's exciting. I do fish one tournament every year, usually, or I help weigh. I go off and on, me and my little boy, Aiden. I got a 12-year-old, and I guess earlier you asked about evolving or not evolving as a fisherman, but you asked about me as a fisherman. When I first started fishing, I've gone in stages. I'd say I had the passion as a young kid that I just wanted to get the limits. And then I'll admit it, when social media came out, everyone wanted to be the that guy, or everyone wanted to be the Clayton Folden. And, I kind of got wrapped up in that, and I'm in a stage in life now where I got three little kids, and I just really appreciate, I had a dad and his son, grandpa, son and grandson on Thursday night. I'm going to have a lot of clients that hear this podcast. I love having them all in the boat. I consider some of my best friends my clients. But I do love fishing with children and watching their smiles. And you asked about stories earlier. I always used to love watching boats come in and out on the dock at Partial Bay. And I learned that when the guys were loading their boats, the best time to catch bass, and maybe you know this, Taylor, or not, or the best time to catch bass, walleyes, or whatever, is when that prop is disturbing the water. So I was the kid that interfered with all the fishermen. They were loading their boat. I was running down with a little 1/8-ounce jig and a twister tail, and I was throwing it right at their prop in the prop wash and picking off bass. But now I'm sitting in my truck as I talk to you, and I got a roll of Latin Dress Guide Service hats. And there's two ways you can get a hat with me. One, you catch your first muskie with me. Or two, if you're a kid on the dock and I come by, if I have hats in my truck, I always give away hats to kids on the dock just because I love seeing that passion. And, that's the future of our sport. And being a dad, I'm just a big softy, and I love seeing kids fish. I love hearing the screams, the squeals, watching even my little girl. We can go out and minnows in the live well are her favorite thing. She don't care if we catch fish sometimes, but just playing in the, I guess, so I'm kind of getting off on being a dad more than the fishing aspect of it. But
no, man, that's huge. That's a huge part of it. You know, just, you know, understanding you and your passion, that's really what drives you. It's really what drives you. You know, you talk about, you know, when you're young and you don't have that family, you know, yet. And so sometimes you're just driven by the bites, you know, you're driven by the photos. And like you say, social media comes out, and then just catching big ones and being able to show that off is always a sort of a validating thing. But yeah, like just the big picture experience of, you know, being able to consistently put people, you know, people of all shapes and sizes and skill levels. That's what I think is great about, you know, longtime guides or people that can have a guide career and be able to say that their clients are good friends. That's such a big part of it, where you got to have that perspective. Otherwise, you're just going out for yourself and they're along for the ride. And, you know, yeah, you might catch a bunch of fish that day, but you maybe ram it down their throat a little bit because you're just trying too hard and it's kind of a selfish approach. But with you, it's like, you know, it's fun to hear those stories and just know that that's what makes you tick, because it's very genuine. And you definitely, you pay attention to the details in so many different scenarios. And that's where, as an angler and a fan, I can really learn a lot from that too. So it's, but you know, knowing that that's what drives you, I think that's really important to, you know, to talk about for sure. And talking about paying attention to the industry and, you know, yeah, forward sonars and the open water fishing on the Great Lakes and these Western reservoirs. But I definitely do want to keep pressing your buttons with some of this shallow stuff, because I agree with you. I think it's fun when somebody gets, you know, back in. Even with bass fishing too, you look at the big stages of bass fishing. When guys get way back into some cricks and they're casting shallow, you know, like the John Coxes of the world in bass fishing, or you know, there's some really sneaky guys on Sakakawea like yourself. I'm trying to expose you here, but like you know guys that you know, you're not out on the main lake point, you know, trading paint with all the other boats and you know, all the bait riggers and stuff like that. You're looking for some of that sneaky stuff and you're not scared to fail, right? You talked about that. You've learned so much through your failures early in your career. That's super important as well. But, you know, talking about that shallow bite, like anywhere, but talking Sakakawea, just because that's, you know, one of your main bodies of water. You know, one thing that I hear a lot are conversations that I've had, and there's a lot of different perspective, there's a lot of different opinions on this, but that shallow bite a lot of times, you know, in comparison to a deep bite, the consistency is tough, especially with big fish. You know, people talk about these reservoir walleyes, they move a lot. Like, what are some of that shallow walleye, you know, philosophy for you? Like, how do you make a shallow bite more consistent? How do you go day in and day out and get good bites shallow, especially like this time of year in the summer?
I think the shallow bite is, I wish I could say it's consistent, Taylor, but I stay most consistent by following the migration of fish. I mean, if we're talking Sakakawea in general, Sakakawea, your fish in the spring migrate north into the river. A lot of them do, as far as in the western part. And then you follow them down. And I would say staying ahead of the migration of fish, paying attention to the water levels. Anytime it's rising, if the water is starting to drop fast, like we might see in the next couple weeks, and if there's no wind, that shallow bite can be tough no matter what. As far as looking for the shallow bite, paying attention to if the weeds are alive or not. You know, it was probably 10 years ago, me and Clayton were fishing on rodeo one night, and we were pitching jig shallow. And once again, I wish I don't have many stories where I beat Clayton fishing. That is a common thread with people to fish them, but we're fishing and he caught probably like 5-1 of my fish or 3-1. And at the end of the night, he goes, "Do you realize, Kellen, what you were doing different?" And I'm like, I was really trying to zero in and learn. And I was getting a little bit frustrated, but he was just beating me, and he was only pitching the trees. The water was rising in the weeds, and there was a bunch of, like, I don't know what kind of these little thin trees were, but they were like 3-4 feet out of the water, but he was only pitching to the ones with green leaves. Why? Because there's bugs on the leaves, and where there's bugs, there's minnows. Where there's minnows, there's walleyes, you know, and 80% of the island had dead weeds on it that had already drowned out. Well, the 20% that was hanging on to the live weeds or the live trees, that's where the fish were holding. And I don't know, just picking up on little experiences like that, but I would say migration, following the migration of fish, looking for dirty water, weeds that are alive, not dying. And then another big misconception that we have is muskie fishermen, I was going to say, is walleye fishermen. The other day, I caught a 28-inch walleye on a 12-inch, one-pound musky bait. We have this misconception with walleyes, one, that they don't eat big baits. Big walleyes, we're starting to learn it, but big walleyes love big baits. I pitch a lot of bigger stuff, reaction-style baits at walleyes. I'll throw 6-inch phantoms at walleyes in shallow bays. I've done it many a times. And people would look at that, and I've had people look at me and think, what the heck is that guy doing? And so I would say, to me, a walleye, a big walleye, is like an apex predator. They don't, you know, if a big walleye eats a phantom, or if they eat a rubber or a chatterbait, I don't lose them, Tyler. They don't come off. You know why? They choke the bait. They choke the bait. The pike, the bass, even muskies, they're hooked on the side of the head a lot of times. They're, you know, they're hooked on the outside of the lip. A big walleye on a reaction bait, it's swallowed. It's so I think a lot of times people have this idea that you need a smaller bait in the shallow waters. No, I want something that moves water. I want that big walleye, if he's buried in 3 foot of weeds, if it's 5 foot of or 5 foot deep water and the weeds come up to within a foot of the surface, that walleye's buried down in there. I want him to feel the vibration. I want him to know that there's something above there. And it's fun. Like, I had a Governor's Cup pre-fishing day back in, I don't know, 2012 or 13. And we were chucking, this shouldn't be the chatterbait podcast, but we were chucking chatterbaits over submerged weeds. And we were catching, on average, 10 to 12 pound catfish that were blowing up like bass on the surface. They were literally, these chatterbaits are, you can watch them coming across the weeds. And we'd catch 3-4 10-pound cats, 12-pound cats, probably had a couple 15s. They were huge. And just fun fishing. Every fourth, fifth fish was probably a 23, 24-inch walleye. Mm. And that's something that's maybe thinking outside of the box that, you know, a lot of, I don't know if it's thinking outside of the box nowadays, but 10 years ago it was definitely outside of the box, I would say. So my approach to pitching shallow water a lot of times includes my bait selection, which is a lot bigger baits than what people throw. Like I'll throw musky spinner baits sometimes and just rip them through the weeds. Or even though I might be in 5 foot of water, I might be throwing a 3/8 ounce jig with a big paddle tail, a 5-inch paddle tail. You know why? Because I might have weeds on the paddle tail, but I'm ripping it through the weeds. I'm not finesse fishing it, you know? And then I'm not using, you asked earlier about, you know, how many rods you have in your boat or how many different presentations. If I'm throwing stuff like that, I'm probably throwing 14 pound, you know, braid. I'm throwing a lot heavier braid on that line. And I'm not worried about when you're ripping fast moving baits through shallow water, especially dirty water. I'm not worried about, you know, the line for clarity or spooking the fish. That fish a lot of times has a split second to decide whether he's going to eat it or not. And if it's a walleye, he's going to choke it.
God, I love hearing stuff like that. I'm the guy that's listening. I'm learning from this and I'm always trying to relate to it. I'm always trying to think of the next time that I can get out and try to mess with some of this and build confidence in it. And that's it right there, is like, how do you build confidence in something that's ultimately unorthodox to, you know, the traditional, you know, walleye, you know, fishing techniques. And I think you're right with, obviously, like, not a lot of people are doing it. The internet and, you know, social media, you know, platforms like this, like, we're having these conversations now. So it's not as much of an out of the box thought or conversation, but the confidence is still rare. A lot of guys, a lot of anglers, myself included, I love hearing the stories. And I, you know, if I get a chance to go try it, I will. But man, if I don't have that success early, then I'm so vulnerable to bailing on it. I'm so vulnerable to, well, you know, maybe this just isn't the spot, or this just isn't the, you know, the time. And so definitely curious about more of that sort of thing, of like how you build confidence doing some of these things that are still, you know, would be considered unorthodox. You know, it's mainstream in conversation now, but the confidence is still rare across the board for walleye anglers for stuff like this, like throwing bigger baits. And you know, you're that guy. You've got that experience with other species. So like, I just love it. Those stories, I think, are just what's really going to help somebody maybe grind a little bit harder than usual. And maybe they're going to achieve it. Maybe they're going to unlock it. Just listening to you talk about that, where, you know, I might go 10 casts in a row and catch big catfish and just assume that this spot's full of catfish. But if they're nice catfish, there's got to be a reason why these top end predators want to live in here. I should stay in here and just keep looking and hunting a little bit more. So I love those stories, man. Keep going.
Yeah, I think so. Another thing with these big walleyes and these big fish, I think there is, Taylor, I'm confident that there's resident fish that live shallow almost their whole life. I'm confident there's, it's one of my theories, but I feel that there's, and we're seeing this in the tournament world right now, there's resident walleyes, I feel, that never come up shallow. They might come up to spawn, but then like on Skakwea, I think that they live their whole life open water. And maybe that's something that in muskie fishing has taught me. You know, I catch the same muskie a lot of times on New Johns or Audubon. I might catch the same muskie 3 times a year. I can think of last year I had two muskies that I caught twice, and both times they were within 30 yards of where I caught them the first time. I got a lot of experience muskie fishing up in Canada, and we'll catch the same muskie on the same rock at Lake of the Woods year after year a lot of times. And I see that on Skakwea a lot, and that gives me the confidence, I guess. You said confidence is key. I feel that if you're confident, you are going to pay attention more to the little things. You're going to pay attention when you're doing a figure eight. That's the one thing tough with me doing a podcast is you got to switch species with me all the time, because I'm always switching species. But when you're confident and you're doing the figure eight the right way, it's something, the little things matter. Speeding it up on the straightaways, hanging it high in the corners, doing those little things are going to catch you, you know, 2-3 times more fish than you would if you're not paying attention. So I think a lot of being confident is doing the little things right. And when you do the little things right in fishing, it leads to success. So in the musky world, you hear about moon phases all the time. I might go against the grain on moon phases. I think that moon phases make musky fishermen just zero in and pay attention, because they're going out to a spot going, oh, moon over foot's in 5 minutes. You know, we gotta pay it, or moon under foot's in 5 minutes. We gotta pay attention right now. They're just doing, yeah. They're going to their best spot. They're paying attention. They're doing the little things right. They catch a fish, then give all the credit to the moon. Which, to contradict what I just said, I do pay attention. I'm probably one of the few walleye anglers that pays attention to moon phases. I don't, maybe there's a bunch more that I know. I don't hear many walleye anglers talk about it. I definitely, when I'm guiding, if I see a bunch of big hooks and I can't get them to go, and we're fishing throughout the day, I might not tell my clients that, but we'll go back to that day. You know, if moon rises at noon, you know, I'll show up back at that same spot at 11:45, especially if we've already got them their fish. We're catching, releasing, trying to get a big one for a picture, or just having fun. I will go back to those fish at moonrise or moonset. So I would say that musky fishing has crossed over into my walleye life. Smallies, God bless them, I don't know if they pay attention to the moon phase. I don't. They just like to eat.
They just like to eat.
I love fish that just love to eat, because they make me look good, and they're a lot easier most of the time. So, you know, I have never paid attention to it with smallies, but I have paid attention to the moon with walleyes, and definitely on the bigger fish, it matters. And I think a lot of times your bigger fish, to cross back, we were talking about big baits, I feel like a big muskie you might only eat once a week. It might only eat once a week, but it's going to be a 20-inch sucker. I don't want to say walleye because I'll get everyone upset on this podcast, but it'll eat a 20-inch sucker or 20-inch Cisco. You know, it'll eat something big, something worth its time. I feel that's the same way with walleyes. And we've seen that in the tournament world too. Creek chubs. Everyone in their life needs creek chubs right now. Why? Big creek chubs trigger walleyes. Well, guess what? In shallow water, big baits trigger walleyes. They might not move for an 1/8-ounce jig and a twister tail, but you throw, you know, something that's a 6-7-inch bait over the top of their head, they're going to eat it. There's a reason why walleyes love white bass, or they're always around white bass. Why? They're eating their young. They're, I don't know how many walleyes in Skok we have cleaned that have, you know, full of half-dollar size white bass that are pretty good size, you know. And I think those big ones, you know, they prey on the bigger fish. So I think that's something to making them trigger. Like I referenced earlier in this podcast, though, I have a lot of philosophies, and I'm hoping that when I die, 10% are right. So
yeah, but that's the fun of fishing, right? Is like just thinking about it all the time. Like guys like you that just completely embody the lifestyle of a passionate, you know, grindy angler that, you know, you don't have to be multi-species for this. I love talking to guys that are obsessed over one thing in one place too. You know, they usually have a lot of details figured out there and great conversation, but with you, I love bouncing around. I love that you bounce around with all your experience on different species and all that stuff. And because, you know, that's the big fun of fishing is to have a theory and go out fishing. You know, fishing is new. Even if you're fishing the same kind of area or the same, you have one home body of water and your boat is on a lift somewhere and you're pretty much 90% of your fishing happens in one particular place. But, you know, if you've never fished shallow weeds before on your home lake because you've always been a bottom bouncer guy, you know, and you fish deep break lines or whatever, or you're a troller, you know, whatever, what's old is new. When I talk to somebody like you, I just get, my mouth just starts watering for, you know, all the things that I haven't thought about, you know, all the things you're talking about that I need to go back out and think about next time I'm out there. Because even if it's just one or two bites that I get, you know, when I start implementing, you know, these things that you're talking about, like, I'm going to send you a picture. I love it. Like sometimes, you know, this day and age, it's so much less about limits and it's so much less about, you know, just, you know, how many you catch. But it's so much fun of fishing is the theories and catching them in a new way, or catching a fish that's living somewhere where that you just never approached it. You know, you think about this time of year, you know, fishing shallow for a lot of people, that's not their, you know, they're thinking deep, you know, these fish got to be deep. And that, you know, maybe the core population is there. Maybe, you know, if you're a walleye guy on Sakakawea, if you want your graph to light up with as many fish as possible, you know, realistically, it is probably, you know, deeper, you know, not living in the weeds. But man, the bites that you're talking about is definitely what I'm looking for, is all that stuff. What's old is then new. So if you have fished a certain section of the lake, or like I said, you got a home body of water and your whole life you fished a certain way, be thinking about new, you know, be thinking about this, these new things, building confidence in something different. And you know, that's just this kind of stuff that gets me super fired up. But that fishing bigger baits shallow, and I love the weed conversation and paying attention to where the weeds are alive versus dead. I had a great conversation with a biologist in Minnesota earlier this year where we talked about that, is underwater cameras for a lot of people, or in the wintertime, definitely like in Minnesota, a lot of those lakes where you can get in, you know, you can see weeds all over the lake, you know, on your Vexilar or whatever. But if you drop a camera down, you realize that they're not all alive. They're not all green. And when you find the green ones, it's going. And totally, guys like Clayton that just, you know, there's still such a big place in fishing for people that can just read the conditions, read the water, observe the nature of it all, and put themselves in a position to get some really, really great bites. I love that, because I can definitely get carried away on this podcast and just talk to the Forward Sonar guys and figure out how to, you know, buzz around and find individual fish and cast at them. And I love that too. That's a big obsession for everybody. That's just a different conversation. But this is, you know, something that people can do in a small boat. You don't have to have a giant boat to fish, you know, shallow water. And you don't have to have all the electronics. There's still just, you know, something to be said for a good pair of polarized sunglasses and some big swim baits and a hard work ethic. And you just get after it. And you can just have some of the best bites of an entire season, you know, and just and then your confidence goes through the roof. For me, like, and Jason, he's always says this stuff too, is you kind of got to fake it till you make it sometimes, where if you don't have confidence in something, but you're convinced that it's a good theory and you're going to spend the day on it, you almost kind of just got to give yourself a false sense of confidence until it really starts happening. Because I think you're right. When people fish without confidence, the difference is the details. How, you know, your cadence, like if you're lazy with your casts, you know, if you're not ripping it hard enough to rip through the weeds just right. You know, if you're not fishing all the way back to the boat, maybe the fish are, you know, if you don't get one in the first, you know, 3-4 cranks, you know, then you just burn the bait back and you throw it back in. Well, sometimes those fish don't eat until they get closer to the boat and you start raising that bait. You know, but you got to pay attention to those details. I don't know. I love it. This kind of stuff fires me up big time, Kellen. I do want to spend a couple minutes. I want to spend a couple minutes on the muskies. Just status of muskie fishing is kind of a cool thing right now in North Dakota. There's a lot of bodies of water that have muskies, you know, and that information is public. You can go look up stocking reports and things like that. But like, you know, from you, you know, just talking about, you know, the muskie fishing in North Dakota, you know, just that there's some great opportunities out here. How do we give the muskies a little bit of love in this conversation and just let people know that there's some great opportunities here?
Oh, I think between the muskies in North Dakota right now, people don't realize it's not muskies so much as tiger muskies. We have two of the top tiger muskie fisheries in the country, in New Johns and in Audubon, and even, I mean, it's public knowledge that the River Valley City in Ashtabula, I mean, yeah, they get a lot over there. And I fish Audubon and New Johns. And, you know, last year was amazing. This year has been a little bit slower. Audubon, you know, the weeds never died last year through the ice. So we had a bunch of old weeds that died early in the year. And it kind of made fishing a little bit tougher. But, you know, the odds of catching a tiger are really, really good. I get people that fly out here and fish with me that have chased a tiger their whole life and they've never caught one. And, you know, this year I think I've had 14 guided trips for muskies and I think I'm at 16 or 17 muskies. So it's been, realistically, it's been slower, but we're still getting at least one a day. You know, last year I ran almost 4 fish a day. But I'm the muskies, we're finally getting some stable weather, and they're really been picking up as of recently. So, yeah, you don't have to travel to Minnesota to catch muskies. North Dakota has, we might not have the 50s yet, but we have an abundance of, when I speak of New Johns and Audubon right now, there's a very healthy number of 42 to 47 inch tigers and piers, and, they're a blast. So there's definitely a lot of good musky fishing in North Dakota.
And, you know, and the other fun thing about that I think is true is that, you know, comparatively, like here in the Midwest, if you were going to stay stateside, there's some of the more unpressured fish ultimately, right? I mean, you look at the capital musky fisheries over in like Minnesota and Wisconsin and stuff, and they're always going to be that. They're always going to be the capitals. Probably, at least in our lifetime. But, you know, if you're looking for that adventure and you're looking for a place to go DIY, there's just a lot of fun, thought behind, you know, going somewhere where it's not, you know, there isn't this like a super hungry community of anglers locally where, you know, the pressure.
Yeah, North Dakota, I haven't seen a ton of fishermen. You know, there's Audubon definitely does see some more pressure now. Like, on an average weekend, I've seen up to 10, 12 boats, and people kind of think that's pressure. Well, like you said, that's not pressure compared to out east, you know, Minnesota, Wisconsin.
Right. There could be 10 boats on one weed line on a, like on Leech Lake or, you know, or Mille Lacs or, you know, some of these capital fisheries where, you know, yeah, you just got to take your turn in a good area. It's like, but you can find your own water when you're out here, even on these, you know, pretty, you know, they're not ginormous water bodies, but man, there's plenty of room for everybody out here. I think that that's something to point out. And I think it's cool that you've definitely been at the tip of the spear, since in your career with the muskies and the big pike deal. So I definitely wanted to give you a chance to give that a little love.
Yeah, I love muskies. If I get a day off, muskies are definitely one of the top choices for me. I love the mental grind. I don't know if it's a sickness, because we talk about having confidence. If you want to test yourself, not only physically but mentally, muskie fishing is definitely a great opportunity. It's kind of, I always tell people, if you love bow hunting or if you love decoying snow geese, muskie fishing is a lot like both of them. Your success is not always, you know, a given. Like you're going to spend lots of days and effort trying, but when that big buck walks in and you put an arrow in him and you get that picture or that moment, or that big tiger blows up your bait after casting 8 hours of not seeing nothing, and you get that adrenaline rush. I had a gentleman last night that he said he caught his first muskie with me, and as soon as it hit the bag, he just smiled and he goes, "That was the coolest fish I've caught in North Dakota." And he was spoiled. He only had to cast about a half hour. But the reward is huge when it comes to chasing those big fish. Earlier we were talking about crossing over from species to species. I actually, Taylor, here's a story for you. I figure aided a walleye the other night. I had a walleye come in on a shallow jerk bait, and I seen it flash. And I actually figured it ate on the second turn. And it wasn't very big. The story's a lot cooler if I don't tell the size. But it was like a 16-inch walleye. And I've never had that happen before. But that was kind of a highlight of my night, was seeing one eat in the figure eight. But back to muskies and big pike. Our resource is amazing. I hope Game and Fish keeps it up. You know, they quit stocking piers. Now they're just doing the tigers. I'm hoping we get back to doing some piers too. We're very blessed to have the fishery we have.
Yeah, dude. Well, I love it, man. I can't wait to have you back on, Kellen, because, you know, your career really speaks for itself already. You got a long career ahead of you, but you've done a lot of great fishing. You've been at the tip of the spear. A lot of people look to you as being one of those guys. I know you've mentioned a lot of names that have helped you along the way, but, you know, your clientele and, just the local fishing community. I mean, you're definitely one of those guys, and I appreciate getting your stories and getting some of that stuff. It fires me up. I know I need to spend a lot more time fishing shallow, because those are just my favorite bites. I mean, I don't know how else to, I mean, I don't know. I'm an opportunist. I'll catch them any way I can. Right. But definitely, if I'm out by myself, or if I'm out, with my buddies, or if I'm out with Jason, and so often when we just have that time to ourselves, you know, we're going to test our theories. We're going to have conversations about that, you know, where we're going to try to be outside the box, but within reason, to catch a fish and try to catch a fish that we otherwise wouldn't, or that nobody else would. And sometimes it's just that one bite in a day, or one bite, you know, in a month of fishing, where, it just a big bite. It can be that's relative, that, you know, depending upon the body of water you're on or what your theory really is. But, you know, sometimes it's a 25-inch walleye, you know, in the end of July on Sakakawea in a bay where you're pitching over weeds, and it's a, you know, a 6-inch paddle tail that, you get it hung up in some weeds, and you rip it out and you let it fall back down into the weeds. And the next time you go to rip it, it is just stuck to the bottom, and you can just fight those big fish in that shallow water where they got nowhere to go but sideways, and they run and the drag is going. It's like that one bite, you know, and that's like you described musky fishing, you know, in comparison to hunting, it's like sometimes it's one bite a year for something like that. And it's just such a, it's such a cool thing in fishing that those memories, they just, then they just last forever, man. It's just, that's the drug. And like you said, it's a sickness and the only medicine is making those memories and getting out and doing it, man. So, man, I appreciate it. I appreciate all the stories. I love the philosophy. I'll say this, we'll sign it off. If you're down, if people have questions or they want to inquire about a guide trip or just any kind of questions like that, and we'll just want to follow along on your exploits, promote yourself, anything that you want to throw out there, content, or your social medias, your phone number, whatever you want, throw it out there.
Yeah, just Ladner's Guide Service. I have a Facebook page, Instagram page, and then cell number 701-720-6510. And thank you very much, Taylor, for having me on.
Yeah, man. Yeah, dude, I appreciate it.